Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With David Slack this morning. Morena, David, how are you?
Morena, Rachel. I'm very well, thank you.
It is great to have you on the line. A whole lot has happened, as it feels like it's been happening every couple of weeks in politics, locally and internationally. I do want to start in Aotearoa, though. The Prime Minister has said that they're not going to be raising benefits before Christmas time, and this has copped a lot of flack from poverty action groups. In fact, there's been a huge letter from about, I think it's 40-something groups who've sort of said the government needs to be doing more to tackle poverty. And there's sort of been bigger conversations going on about what is going to happen with this mandate that the government has. You know, such a landslide for Labor. But this kind of means now that they have the reins to do what they want, but are they actually going to do the transformational things that people are hoping for? What are your thoughts around this, David? Because it is a bit of a big conversation.
Surely, yeah. So maybe we'll split those into two, the benefit question first. That came up, I think, more in the context of a reporter saying, will you be doing this before doing a Christmas lift? And mm-hmm. because there wasn't a specific plan to do it, she said no. I can see a sort of an argument that says as long as you're going to do a shitload next year, that would be acceptable, really. And it's kind of maybe got more legs than it should have because of the second part of the question, which is there's been a lot of waiting and a lot of talk with nothing happening. And so when you get an answer like that, you think, well, God, are you guys ever going to do the big moves? Now, if you look at the composition of that new cabinet, you've got some very capable people with the potential to do some big things and without the kind of drag on them that the last coalition arrangement had. So potentially, some large things could happen. The thing that you worry about with this outfit is that they will once again kind of surrender to gradualism and caution.
Mm.
And so you could have all of these great ministers with great ideas, but things might not move as substantially as they could. I don't make predictions because I think it's a waste of time. But I think the possibility is there for them now to do big things in the first year, and if they want this to be lasting, that's where it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sort of circle back around to an idea we've talked about a couple of times before in these conversations, and that is the idea of making a broadening things that the government, the goods and services the government provides for free, as a better alternative to a universal basic income or raising the benefit levels. Because maybe I should start right there by saying, look, the levels are not nearly as good as they should be, and we got the clear demonstration in the wage subsidies of the lockdown that what the government perceives as necessary to live on is actually a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
When they came to saying how much will we give out in a wage subsidy to people to keep going, well, there's your clue right there. These numbers are not right. Now you can move on those numbers to fix things in the short term, but in the longer, and maybe they should be doing that in the new year, but in the longer run, I would see a lot more utility in taking this idea of free stuff, which is the idea of expanding what the state is already doing in certain areas, for example, education, housing to a limited extent. You know, the idea began with state houses in the wake of the Depression. And the notion is that nobody has buying power like the government. Nobody has the capacity to provide services like the government.
Mm-hmm.
And why not consider expanding that into aspects of energy, into food, into housing, into transport, so that you have an entitlement to these things as of right? There's no administration to it. These things are just available to everybody, and they have to be available to everybody. Otherwise, you do have to have a lumbering administration system with, you know, food stamps and all of that kind of thing that ruins the whole simplicity of the proposition. Now, if you could do all that, you would address the needs of the most vulnerable, but you would also anticipate the huge change we've got in the future of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the automation, the huge change that we all know is coming. If you can provide a better foundational support for living, which is equivalent to universal basic income, but it's to do with providing the goods and services, you may actually find a better way through it. Now, I would love to see this administration exploring all of those possibilities in this term, and those all of those very talented new ministers really having a go at it. And I suppose, as I lay all that out and recognise that you can't do that in 5 minutes, there's got to be a transitional arrangement, and so therefore those benefit levels for the most vulnerable need to rise, and they need to rise substantially. And now we come to the final aspect of that, all of this proposition, that is, well, what about the debt that might entail? There's never been a better, easier time for governments to be borrowing money. The money has never been less expensive. When Muldoon was borrowing money, the interest rate was punishing.
Yeah.
It's almost negligible at the moment. So there's so much the government could be doing if it wanted to, and they ought to be.
Well, that is definitely a topic I think we're going to just keep talking about, because we've got 3 years of this term, so it will be very interesting to see what happens there. We've also got 3 years of National in opposition, and they have just announced their shadow cabinet, and we've also seen Gerry Brownlee step aside as the leader, and Dr. Shane Retty is taking the deputy leader role, and so this is a big sort of shuffle around. We've seen quite a few people moving up and down the rankings as well, and I'm curious about what your thoughts are. Were there any sort of appointments that stood out to you from yesterday's announcement from the National Party?
I wouldn't say that it was a moment of great excitement. It's kind of like putting on a barbecue when all you've got is saveloys. But Shane Retty is interesting in the sense that he could be a moderating influence on the extravagant language of the pop-up leader of the opposition. But he also has this, and there are aspects of his backstory that are really endearing and admirable, you know, like writing a cheque for $70,000 for running a campaign to get fluoridation in the far north. That's really great. On the other hand, he does have this sort of courtly, otherworldly kind of dimension to the way he speaks, and I kind of wonder exactly what his worldview is going to, what kind of worldview is going to emerge as we see more of him.
Right.
But you know, if there's a choice between him and Judith Collins, and for example, Dr. Brash, he's the doctor I like most. In terms of finance, I've had a little bit to do with Andrew Bailey, and he's actually quite a smart, capable guy. I could see him being relatively able. I wouldn't say that he's necessarily visionary, and I wouldn't say that looking right across that cabinet, there's a whole lot of vision. You know, the vibe is still motorways, more motorways, and tax cuts. And if they want to have some kind of appeal for a new generation, something's got to give, and I don't see it there yet. And I was listening to Judith Collins earlier this morning talking about the lineup and saying, well, she's just dealing with the hand she's got, meaning, you know, they've got far fewer people, and it's the truth. And it does make it hard for you, and it makes it doubly hard for you when you've got somebody like David Seymour who will shamelessly say any old thing that generates headlines, sucking the oxygen out. That means that you've the chance to be a vocal opposition is that little bit more diminished.
I wanted to touch extremely briefly, because I feel like we've got a lot going on in Aotearoa. As you say, you know, we've got plenty of things happening in our own backyard here, but, you know, America is still being America across the ditch, and Trump is still very much being Trump, once again contesting the legitimacy of Biden's victory in the recent election. And this just kind of seems to keep playing out in slightly different iterations since last week's sort of announcement that Biden had crossed the line, basically. What does it sort of mean, I guess, to watch a president or an outgoing president have this vocal contestation of the vote in a country like America? What does that mean?
It's discouraging, of course, because there is polling already showing that a majority of Republican voters, well, no, more than two-thirds of Republican voters who before the election didn't believe all his vote-rigging stuff, now say they don't have faith in the democratic in the electoral process. That's really worrying. Whether that necessarily translates into actual resistance at the pinch point, meaning, you know, when the personnel must change, you have to guess, but my hunch is that most people don't want to see things go violent and bad, and therefore the sort of nut job constituency of the wearing the MAGA red caps that Trump has, I suspect, still represent only a small proportion of the population, and the wish for a peaceful coexistence will be the stronger. I hope I'm right, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people feeling quite like that at the moment. David, it's always such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Will do. Cheers.
See ya. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary with David.